Coming up on the Shelley Irwin Show podcast today, the roving Mike headed to Gaylord, Michigan to visit Treetops Resort and see what activities they have planned for this winter. The second annual Women's Sports and Health Expo happens the third weekend in February. We get a preview. We talk to the author of A Greek Tragedy, One Day, A Deadly Shipwreck, and the Human Cost of the Refugee Crisis. And Beer Distillery joins in with some non-alcoholic spirits.
Roving microphone headed up to northern Michigan. You like to ski, tube, or snowshoe? We did. Well, maybe more just the snowshoe. Gaylord, Michigan, Treetops Resort. Terrain-based learning, the key here, especially for the beginner. Let's bring you the lesson.
Kelly Wolgamut, Vice President, Pure Michigan.
All right, here we are. Do we call this, I guess, the ski season here at Treetops this January time?
Absolutely. You know, we have been blessed this season in Michigan with an early snowfall. So we had considerable snowfall in November and December, and it just continues. We have some continued a few months ahead of us of some great ski opportunities.
You've got it on your head, Pure Michigan. What are you all about?
Yeah, so Pure Michigan is, you know, the campaign for the state, and what we do is to inspire travelers to come visit us through all of our destinations throughout the state. It throughout our four seasons, you know, we have the incredible four seasons here in the state, and right now we are in the midst of an incredible winter and enjoying to get out at the ski resorts across the state, but also get out on the trails, get out and go dog sledding, get out and just go visit Tequamanon Falls this time of year. It's just an incredible opportunity.
Michigan invites us. Little birdie tells me you learned to ski here at Treetops.
I did. You know, I did not grow up as a skier and decided as an adult, you know, I always wanted to ski. I always thought it was just looks like such a fun time to go down the slopes and enjoy it with your family and friends, and decided as an adult, you know, I'm going to do this. So I did learn to ski at Treetops, and just so recommended if you have not experienced downhill skiing to take a lesson. They do such an incredible job to make you feel comfortable on everything that you need to know to get down the hill.
How does one best plan their way to experience Pure Michigan in a winter time?
Great question. We have lots of great information on Michigan.org. So that's the Pure Michigan official website. And we have lots of inspirational blogs and events. We have so many great events this winter from the UP 200, the I-500, the ski jumping in the UP. So many great things to see and do and experience this winter. So Michigan.org.
And it's important we kind of dress for the winter.
Absolutely.
Like your fur coat here.
Absolutely. You know, it's all about the what you wear. You know, your cuddle dugs underneath your pants and your warm socks and your hand and feet warmers. And get out there and enjoy this beautiful time of year in Pure Michigan.
Season of winter. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Brad Jacobson, Director of Ski at Treetops.
You have a big job come winter time.
Yeah, yes, I do. It's a lot of fun, and it's never a dull moment, and every day is different, which is exciting.
Who should be skiing?
Anybody and everybody, whether they're beginners, they've never thought about doing it before, or if you're a seasoned vet of skiing, come back out, especially at Treetops. We have what's called terrain-based learning, so it's an area that is solely focused on honing in your skills, learning in a safe environment. So we have five different stations throughout the terrain-based learning, so you can kind of learn the progression and the process of how to ski or snowboard.
And that's available for one who comes to stay here.
Absolutely, yep. It's free of charge, so you can either be self-guided. So if you just buy the lift ticket or the rental and you want to go through yourself, there's QR codes you can scan at each station to watch a little minute and a half video of how to, or you can sign up with one of our snow sports instructors to get a little more thorough training.
Are we downhilling? Are we snowboarding? Are we cross-country skiing? What's the thing this 2026?
Oh, we've got everything under the sun. So, yeah, we've got or on the snow. So we've got snowshoeing, cross-country trails, downhill skiing, snowboarding, and we also have our extreme tubing park.
What makes Treetops unique?
You know, it's a really family-focused resort, especially for winter activities. You know, everything's centrally located at the top of the hill with the restaurants. All three chairlifts end right there. We just really focus on this family-friendly environment.
When did you put on your first skis?
I think I was about 7, 8 years old. I put them on and skied for a little bit. And then when I was about 12, I switched over to snowboarding and do both.
And look at you now. Thank you very much. So if I fall, I just get up?
Yeah, you know, I joke in lessons that you're given three falls, so the first one's going to happen, get it out of the way. The second one comes when you least expect it, and after the second one, who cares if you fall a few more times, as long as you're having fun.
Carter Belangi, ski instructor.
Zane Lease, ski instructor.
So what's a ski instructor do all day?
Oh, we just teach kids how, or teach any age how to just learn how to ski.
What's the biggest mistake we make?
Oh, definitely either too wide of a pizza and falling down or just leaning back.
Is it ever too early or ever too late to learn?
No. I mean, walking, got to be able to walk. But, I mean, I feel like that's a great, like, just being able to walk, I feel like anybody can ski.
So where do I even start? So I want to start to downhill ski. Obviously put the ski on.
Right, got to learn how to put your boots on, got to learn how to put your boot in the ski, got to learn how to put your toe in first, line it up in the back, push that heel down, then you're ready to go.
And do I start on, is there still such thing called a bunny hill?
Oh, 100%. 100%. You got the magic carpet is what we call it.
Nice. And is it all about shifting weight or where I keep my eyes? What's the secret to a good learning situation?
100% keeping your eyes down the hill. It's the same where you're going. We don't want your body facing sideways a lot. We want your body facing downhill. And that's definitely the biggest help.
And are we snowboarding as much nowadays?
I do on my personal time. I want to learn how to teach people how to ski. I do want to get into that department as well. I like teaching everybody how to ski, so I want to be able to do both.
And skiing is a lifetime activity, but how important is safety?
Very, very, very important. I do not ski without a helmet. If I come to work and or by myself skiing on my own time and I leave my helmet at home, I will make the time and go home and get it.
And what do the goggles do for you?
Well, they'll protect your face from the wind, and if it's super sunny out, you know, it'll be just like wearing sunglasses out there.
My name's Chris Hale. I'm the Director of Marketing and Sales.
All right. How's Treetops doing? Are we the number one choice to head come January and more?
Certainly part of the Pure Michigan winter tourism options for beginner families and newbies to the sport of skiing. There might not be a more ideal place to start.
I can come up and stay at your place and not leave the place, or I can enjoy winter time. What are you seeing, and what do you recommend?
Well, there is something for everyone. Not everybody wants to ski or snowboard, and for those who choose not to or prefer something just as an alternative, I really love snowshoe hiking with my family. An awful lot of folks enjoy our Nordic trails, whether you're a classic skier or a skate skier.
Wonderful. And you?
I'm sorry, to continue. For those who are a little more nostalgic, taking a horse-drawn sleigh ride is pretty unique and certainly beautiful and memorable. With the amount of snow that we get here in Gaylord, you really can choose what it is that makes you tick. An awful lot of folks also come to the area to bring their snowmobiles and get on the trail system here in Gaylord, heading north or south. There is something for everyone here.
So let's bring you to the audience that gets an education in terrain-based learning.
So you can kind of learn those basic fundamentals. So if you fall, you know how to get back up. If you need to sidestep to get back up to a little bit higher on the hill or a transition, this shows that process. And this is what our instructors do. So TBL, again, is open to anybody that has a lift ticket. They're more than welcome to use this at any time when we're open. But where the instructors make the difference by taking an actual lesson is they're going to show you a lot more than what you're just going to see on these signs and through the QR codes.
So, I can see this for a younger skier, first timer.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
This is how we build confidence.
Right. Yep.
So smart.
If we don't build confidence, mentally, yep. You got to have confidence to be able to go up that. Yeah. Especially at a really young age.
Yep. So
this helps a lot.
The National Ski Area Association does a Kottke survey, and it's 80-some percent of first-time skiers and riders will actually never return back to the sport because either it was fearful, pulling into a parking lot, lots of cars, fast skiers or snowboarders. You see terrain parks. You see the chairlift. You may see lines. it can be very intimidating. So that's where terrain-based learning is really focused on. We're removing the chairlift. We're removing the line. We're removing some of those barriers or those fear that people may have to try to, like Zane said, and like you said, building the confidence. Building the confidence is the key to all of your success. Everything you just learned on your first descent and how to initiate your turn and build that confidence to descend, now we're adding an obstacle. So we're adding the roller. So what this really focuses on is that body compression and extension and confidence of, okay, you're skiing down the hill. Uh-oh, there's something in front of me. What do I do? So the roller will help transition and help you try to build that confidence of how to go down, how to get up, you know, with your body compression and extension. So if you want to demonstrate it a little bit.
Oh, cool.
Oh, so you see how it just, because they're compressing in and then they extend at the top or vice versa. So yeah, you don't have to worry right now. Now the next thing we do, like in the mini pipes, usually before we come over here, we'll actually have you descend and teach you on skis how to put that inside foot pressure so you can turn. So it's pretty cool progression throughout the process.
So yes, let's learn a little bit about snowshoeing before we go on our adventure.
For those that you don't know, we are in the Pigeon River Country State Forest. It is the one of the only few remaining. It's considered the wild area. It's managed, unlike any state forest in the system. It's managed for the elk herd first and foremost, because there are a herd of about 1,400 to 1,600 animals that roam freely out here. It's on a part of three counties. And the big news is through state, federal funds and private donations, they added, there are a few private inholdings within the forest that have been here historically for years. But there's a place called the Black River Ranch, which is about 8,800 acres. They bought that. That puts the forest over 120,000 acres of state forest land. So you can literally, we can go the back way. We could go to Onaway and not see anything. There's no highways or expressways that intersect the forest. There are 11 rustic campgrounds. This is one of them. It's renowned for having the Pigeon River and the Black River, two of the finest trout fly fishing areas literally in the Midwest. And Ernest Hemingway used to hang out here all the time and named it the Big Wild.
And there we are. We did a little WSHExpo.com, staying on the topic of, well, the sport and more. How about the second annual edition of Women's Sports and Health Expo? It's on February 21st. Your tickets are on sale now. Come on and get involved, says Amy Muller, Executive Director. Amy, be careful what you wish for. Morning.
Oh. Morning. How are you?
I'm doing fine. What was your sport? You were a big soccer star,
soccer,
right?
Soccer, yep.
And now you're mom and wife and executive director and more that life throws at you. So you finally come down off year number one. Are you ready for year number two?
Absolutely. Year one was so fun, and we're really excited to ramp up year two. Similar things, but more exciting announcements. And yeah, we're excited.
All right. Again, the power of repetition, this dubbed as a Women's Sports and Health Expo. Of course, men are allowed. What has been your vision here, Amy?
The vision. So again, our mission is really to celebrate, educate, and motivate women and girls in sports and wellness. Our vision is just a community event where we kind of wrap our arms around the women and girls and also those that support them. That's one of the big things is we can't do this on our own. We all have a support system. And what does that look like? And how can we elevate those girls? And yeah, it's just a community event.
One day only, but a lot in this day and experience, as you're mentioning, built not only for women and girls, also for the families, friends, supporters, and more. But it is all about women and girls. So I walk in the door at DeVos Place. What am I experiencing, Amy?
So you'll walk in. We have our vendor village. So again, similar to last year, we've got, right now we have over 85 vendors. So we're really excited about that. They're all sports and wellness related, clinicians, food, drinks, all health and wellness, which is great. Then a big thing is interactive. So again, we'll have our fun 40-yard dash. People can get their 40 time. Some people love seeing their time up in LED lights. Some people don't. But it's run at your own risk. It's a good time. We've got pickleball, basketball. GR Curling is bringing in some synthetic ice. So we're actually going to have a curling sheet there, which will be awesome given the Olympics are this year.
You're
so that's
kind of right
fun.
In the middle of them, I think.
Yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
Very cool. Of course, women's sports all year, all around as well. And of course, yes, Women's Sports and Health Expo. So what kind of take me to the health side if perhaps I'm not the biggest sports fan or fiend?
Absolutely. I think all of us can say that we're quote-unquote athletes, even if you aren't on a field or on a court. I think for us, we have education, which is really big. So we've got some amazing speakers coming in to talk about kind of we have clinicians coming to talk more about the science behind things, how to really nourish our bodies, but also some speakers to talk about. Again, I'm going to kind of delve into the support we have. Well, one, we've got an amazing man that's going to come. His name is Eric Westrum. He's actually a former NHL player and USA hockey player. He's coming in from Minnesota to talk about, he wrote a book called Her First Hero, and he's going to be talking about life experiences, some biblical wisdom, all about how can dads that have daughters, how can coaches, mentors all support the girls in their lives? So he's going to be speaking, which is just, he's a really awesome guy. And then we've got Yumna, who's actually local to Grand Rapids. She is the founder of Feel Good Foodie. She's got millions of followers, the mom nutritionist with IET. We've got some great lineups here.
Wow.
And it's all diversified with clinicians, with motivational speaking, with just information all around health and wellness.
Yes.
And then again, with the health side, we do have vendors that will have, you know, nutrition-based foods. We've got some drinks, some protein stuff, just all around. If you don't identify yourself as an athlete or in a certain sport, this is just everyday stuff that you'll find.
I'm learning more and more, even I've been at this for a while, about the importance of protein. So
yes.
I'll stop by there. You have the sister doctors. I've interviewed
yes.
them prior on
the
behalf
of the Battenbergs. Yes. They are amazing. Yep, we are working with them on what strong looks like. They are powerful twins. They are so smart, so genuine, and they're coming back for year two, and they will be speaking on, again, what does strong look like, and kind of redefining that.
Used to be skinny. Now it's good to be strong. Yes.
Absolutely.
Amy Muller with us, Executive Director. The second annual Women's Sports and Health Expo happens one day only. Get your tickets now, February 21st at DeVos Place. You are bringing in a couple of experts to talk about the Gen Age Center.
Yeah, so they were actually on board last year. They own the Gen Age Center, and they will be speaking on, you know, actually we're delving into that, those details now. Last year they talked a lot about menopause, and they just had an amazing talk. So we are slowly trickling out our speakers, so definitely check out the website. We will have more to come on that, and then the time slots, and we're finalizing our schedule. So yes, check out the website. You'll see all the updates in our socials.
But you have early bird pricing now.
Correct. We have early bird pricing right now through January. So come Feb 1, the prices will increase. So if you want to get the cheapest tickets now, now's your time.
Yes. Amy, let's throw out your sponsor. Can't do it without that.
100%. We are so grateful for ASICS for coming alongside us this year. They have such a brand that really emphasizes strong women and the importance of being active and healthy and what that overall being is. So it was a very natural fit for us. We're really excited. So ASICS is our presenting sponsor, and then Gazelle Sports is coming alongside them and being their big support and helping the infrastructure. And it's just a great partnership. Very, very excited.
Yes. Last year, were there women in the house from all age groups.
Yes. So we had young girls from the ages of, you know, 5 all the way up to older years. I think you can honestly find something for everybody there. It's a very diverse group, whether everyone's kind of bringing in their own expertise, their own knowledge, their own products. So our hope is that you find something that is new to you, that you can try, that fits your lifestyle. And we're really excited.
Yes. And there's more talk now about the importance of weight training, especially for seniors. So I'm sure we can find an expert on that. You've got a physical therapist presenting her work in the world of health and wellness as well. So
absolutely.
You've got to get it in on all one day, but I imagine in the future you'll need two.
Yes, that is absolutely our hope. More to come on that. But yeah, this year we've got just a great lineup of people, awesome vendors, amazing sponsors coming back. And we just couldn't do it without them. And I think for us, we know that everybody kind of brings in their own expertise. And we want to highlight that. And that's what kind of makes this event go round.
Yes. And Amy, again, with your athletic history, you are a mom. You have some girls, right?
You know, I don't. I just
have
three
boys. Oh, you
don't?
You have the three boys. Oh, well, okay.
Yep. I know, right? It's kind of odd there. But yeah, no, I want to raise my boys to know and respect women. And eventually when they get married and they can see their wives be, you know, strong women. And,
there's a lot of pressure, Mom.
Oh, I know, right? I'm losing sleep already, and they're not even 10 years old.
Yeah. Slow down, as they say, or prepare appropriately. Well, you're preparing us to attend your second annual Women's Sports and Health Expo. Looking forward to this. All right, Amy, how do we get our tickets and find out more information?
Yeah, so check out our website, wshexpo.com. You can register there. You can see the lineup of vendors, the whole list there, speakers on there. Our schedule will be released soon. And again, check out our socials. We'll be doing updates, kind of giving you some behind-the-scenes looks, and that is Instagram and Facebook, LinkedIn, WSH Expo, the Women's Sport and Health Expo.
How exciting. All right, have fun. Thanks to ASICS and all of your sponsors, vendors, and, well, the crowd to come, Amy.
Thanks,
enjoy.
Shelley.
It was the afternoon of October 28, 2015, at the height of the biggest refugee crisis since World War II. Journalist author Jean Carstensen documents this Greek tragedy, formerly a Greek tragedy. One day, a deadly shipwreck and the human cost of the refugee crisis. Jean, I'm going to get right into it. An important year, this, 2015.
It's the year of what we call the Syrian refugee crisis, when almost 1 million people ended up crossing from Turkey in these rafts and very unsafe boats, and they would arrive to the Greek islands, and then they would ask for asylum inside Europe somewhere. And so I was there covering all of this. And then on October 28th, I was on the Greek island of Lesbos, and that's when this shipwreck happened. And many sad and difficult things happened during this period, but this shipwreck was something else, because it was a double-decker tour boat that had been way overcrowded with almost 400 people. So both decks were just wall-to-wall people, and the smugglers sent this boat out from Turkey. It wasn't a safe boat. They had just taken it out of a boat graveyard, and it was filled with all these people, and they sent it out into gale-force winds. They didn't have a proper pilot. It was overloaded, and the wind, and the boat it collapsed out in the middle, and suddenly, just within seconds, hundreds of people were thrown into a very, very rough sea. And I saw this from a distance through binoculars. I didn't see the whole thing, but I was able to see the shipwreck out there. And it was in the news at the time, because there were big loss of life, and the whole island was so overcome trying to figure out what to do at the time with the number of dead and all these problems. But years later, I realized, even though I had been there, there was so much I didn't know. I decided to write a book just about one day. And I found people who were on the boat, and then the locals and rescuers that tried to help them.
Yes. Well, a story in itself where you did report, as you mentioned, on the shipwreck that day, but felt, according to my notes, you felt there was more, much more you didn't know about the lives of the people involved. Let's get into the lives. Did anyone survive?
Yes, there were a lot of survivors. So we never know how many people were on the boat because, of course, there's no passenger list when you're traveling this way. The smugglers just cram people on. But my estimate is there were between 300 and around 350 people. There were 242 survivors. And at the time, you know, we said in the media, 12 died, 14 died, 40 died, 50 died. Nobody really knew because bodies are washing in and then nobody keeps track of the statistics. In the end, the coroner told me that he thinks 76 people died in this incident and at least 242 survived. And some people are still missing. Some of the people in my book, you know, they lost some of their family members. Not only did they lose them, but the bodies were never found. And so they can't put their loved one to rest. And that's a painful thing that a lot of people going through crossing by sea go through.
Talk to me a bit about a story. Again, your book, A Greek Tragedy, One Day, A Deadly Shipwreck, and the Human Cost of the Refugee Crisis. Give us a story, and then I'll ask about that human cost.
Okay. Well, one story is a bank loan manager from Kabul, Afghanistan. His name is Hidayat. And I tell his story in the book. You meet him when he's a boy and he's very ambitious and he talks his way into teaching English when he was only 14 years old because the family needed money. You get to know him and his wife and his two young sons. He had to leave because he was targeted by gangs who were trying to force him to give them money. And but he was the stories are just small things. Like when they left Kabul, he made sure to bring one computer tablet that his boys could share because they loved to play Candy Crush. You know, they're regular people.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. And they were in Istanbul and they were trying to get to Europe because they had relatives in Sweden who they wanted to join there. And they met these smugglers and the smugglers told them, you know, don't worry, this is going to be an extra safe boat. They said, you're going to travel just like a tourist. And so he wanted his family to be safe and he knew that he was at risk, but he believed, well, it's a wooden boat. It's going to be better. And so when they got to the coast and saw the boat from a distance, he thought at first, okay, it was a bigger boat. It was a wooden boat. This is going to be okay. But then what happened is they were telling the same story to hundreds of people. And so they all arrived and then realized it wasn't going to be safe. They were going to be forced on with hundreds of people. And also the boat, when they looked at it, they could tell it hadn't been painted, that there were cracks in the wood, that it was not a fancy tourist boat, as they've been told.
What do we take from your tagline, the human cost of the refugee crisis, Jean?
Well, what we take is, you know, what happened is, if we don't provide an option for people to travel safely, you know, the thing was they were going to Europe to try and claim asylum, and they had been invited at the time by Angela Merkel, who said they would at least try and listen to the claims of asylum seekers. But what happened is there was no safe way. They couldn't get visas. So they were forced to get onto these and travel this way. And that's one of the biggest human costs of the refugee crisis. And, you know, another human cost is we just lose our empathy and quit paying attention to really what these people go through. So that's why in my book, I really take you inside the lives of these people. And it's very inspiring to learn, you know, there's the human cost, but there's also the human inspiration of how on the Greek island of Lesbos, people did help. They did help with bottles of water. They did do what they could. And so this story for me is also very hard, but also very, very inspiring. And, you know, there's a lot of migration, or there's fires, and there's different ways that all of us could end up either having to flee our homes, or maybe we might be people where we need to decide, can we help people who have fled their homes? And so that's the message I take away from this book, is just kind of be aware, be ready. This could happen to any of us, and we probably want to be the kind of people who behave with decency.
Talk to me about how to find out more information about your latest work, Jean.
Okay, well, you can buy this book anywhere online at Amazon or Barnes & Noble, or you could ask for it in, you know, in your local bookshop. And I love it if you want to come to my website. It's JeanCarstensen.net. I have a lot more information about the book, and I also have a 5-minute video that you can look at and sort of introduces the book, and you can see some scenes from the actual shipwreck and some of the people. And that's kind of a good way to get started on the story. And I hope people can read it and see what they think themselves.
Thank you for the work you've done. Jean, appreciate you. Again, a Greek tragedy, Carstensen with an S-E-N. One day a deadly shipwreck and the human cost of the refugee crisis. Carry on your good work.
Okay, thanks so much.
My next guests follow this conversation quite timely following, because it is all about what Beer Distillery has for us when it comes to non-alcoholic spirits. Of course, the alcohol spirit's still there, but this not nice alternative. Sarah Beerling, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Joel Beerling, good morning to you.
Good morning.
All right, I can drink your stuff this morning, because it's not the real thing, you know.
It's different than our usual.
Yes. What is your usual?
Our usual is our spirits that we make at Beer Distillery here in Comstock Park, and we've been there for about 10 years now, and so we've been on your show before and always showing you our new alcoholic spirits, but this time we have something a little bit different.
Yes, and Sarah, I mean, are you experiencing a 10-year anniversary this year? Or
We are. We will have our 10-year anniversary in August. It's a little hard to believe.
Wow. Well, we might have to have you come back for that as well. Is there a 5K on your list this year?
Absolutely.
Good.
Are you going to run with us?
I think if I get the, it's usually the first weekend in May, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think I might be able to do that.
Awesome.
Yes. All right. I digress. But you do much for our community. Going back to you, Joel, again, why the choice of this non-alcoholic opportunity?
Right. So Dry January, we were just talking about on the show, is obviously this month. And for the past couple of years, we've seen an increase in people looking for non-alcoholic alternatives during January. And January is always a tough time for our industry anyway, just because it's slow after the holidays. And then when Dry January comes around, it turns even slower. And so distilleries and breweries are always looking for new ways to bring in new customers. And while we already have a long list of non-alcoholic cocktails and things like that that people can drink, this is a new project for us and in the industry in general, to have a non-alcoholic whiskey and gin alternative, which is nice because you can take a normal cocktail recipe and just use these instead of the whiskey or the gin, and you get something that's very close to the cocktail that you'd otherwise have that had alcohol.
Do we call this, Sarah, a mocktail?
I don't necessarily like the mocktail. I would say I'd rather prefer a non-alcoholic cocktail, because mock is not a super positive word to begin with.
Good
but
answer.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people do. And we have a lot of non-alcoholic cocktails already that just use ingredients, juices and tinctures and things like that. So this is just following the same suit. We just happen to have a retail product now that you could take home and use, but we also use at the bar. So
yes, as we look at pouring us a drink, there we are. We can actually order the bottle and take it home, and I can certainly drink and drive after a couple here now.
Oh, yeah. We have these bottles for sale, just like our other bottles as well. So, if you like the cocktails that we make with them, then you're more than welcome to bring a bottle home.
So what's Sarah making?
I am going to be making a gimlet for you, which is just a basic gin cocktail. It's just really like a simple syrup and lemon juice and gin. Oh, Joel's wreaking havoc.
Buy it,
you
break it, you buy it, man.
So we've got our mixer in our cocktail shaker. Joel's going to add 9 ounces of our gin alternative. We like to call this a gin alternative.
Imagine if that was real gin.
Oh, yeah,
gin?
That's a lot of gin. You know, gin. You know what? We'd be going out and having a good time together, Shelley.
Heard that, all in moderation. All right, so you're mixing and you're shaking.
I am shaking.
You're getting your workout.
Yeah, you know what? It's a good workout.
Why should we shake, Joel? Why the shaking?
Well, it makes the cocktail colder, and it does add a little bit of water, too, which is very common with cocktails, to add a little bit of water to kind of moderate the spirits. But mainly to just make it colder. So people like cold drinks, and that makes it cold.
Wow. All right. So all cocktails have a decent amount of water added to them, and often the water's just added by adding ice and shaking. So
yes.
You get us so excited, you forget there's a microphone there.
Yes. That's
all good. All right, so you've poured our drink. Let's reach over. I'm going to have a sip.
Have a sip.
Well, we got to say cheers first.
Oh, cheers. Oh, cheers to 2026.
Cheers.
Yeah.
Mm.
I was thirsty. Can't tell the difference.
Pretty good.
What's the neat, N-I-E-T?
Yep, so that's a Dutch word, and it's really got a number of definitions, but basically non-alcoholic spirits or non-alcoholic things in general have to be less than 0.5% alcohol. And so 0.5, so that's where neat comes from, is kind of the zero, and neat point, 0 point, and anyway, spirits. Hmm. So that's kind of the origin of the name. And the funny thing with coming up with brand names is that you always have to try to find something that's not been used before, that hasn't been taken, so something that's unique. And so this is kind of a play on our Dutch heritage. It also allows us to have a uniquely branded non-alcoholic spirit.
Yes. All right, I'm ready for drink number two, please.
Right. Well, we were going to give you a taste of the whiskey.
Or we can just fake it, and, you know, I can keep swigging my gin here. Yeah. No worries.
Right, so all the non-alcoholic spirits are mostly, like I mentioned earlier, meant to replace a alcohol in a cocktail. They aren't necessarily meant to drink by themselves, although certainly people can. So obviously it's sort of hard to replace what alcohol tastes like. Alcohol tastes like alcohol. You can't really fake alcohol, right? So mainly these non-alcoholic spirits are meant to be a replacement. And so, well, certainly, like I said, you could drink them by themselves. They are meant to mainly be used in a cocktail.
So here I am in my little, I guess, my shot glass.
Right.
And this is my Neat Point Spirits non-alcoholic whiskey.
That's right.
Cheers. I mean, I almost feel guilty. I feel like I'm drinking whiskey, but I think I'm allowed.
You are allowed, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Drink as much as you want.
I mean, it's... And then they all... Okay, I'll just digress. Again, this tastes very good. I'll just say that.
Thank you.
So will these be served February 2?
Oh, yeah. We'll be keeping these in our inventory and always have them on the menu in terms of what we have available for people to drink. Obviously, during Dry January, we were kind of concentrating on this stuff, but you'll certainly be available for the foreseeable future.
Yes. Sarah, more on the experience at, your beer distillery, BIER, celebrating 10 years. How will you celebrate?
You know what? That's in the planning stages. We just came off the holidays and producing this product. I think we'll probably have some kind of celebration, maybe some kind of specials, maybe bringing back some oldies that we've had on the menu since 2016. I think that might be fun. It's a big accomplishment, I think, to have been around for 10 years. It feels like 10 years and doesn't feel like 10 years.
I'll let you two talk about that amongst yourselves. Joel, and you're making all this on your grounds. Do you have distillery makers and all that good stuff?
Oh, yeah. We have lots of equipment. In fact, I keep accumulating more and more. So we're kind of running out of space in terms of equipment. But, yeah, all of our products are made from scratch on site. And so a lot of lot of places will kind of outsource non-alcoholic stuff, and that's something that we don't really want to do. We take great pride in making our products from scratch and by hand, crafting them. And so, yeah, these non-alcoholic spirits are made from scratch on site, as well as obviously all of our other products, including beer and wine.
Sarah, can we eat at Beer Distillery?
Yes, definitely. We have a variety of Dutch and American bar food. We get a lot of people in, especially a lot of people from surrounding communities like Holland, coming in for our Dutch food. A lot of people who even know Joel's parents because they're sort of imbued in the Dutch community. So it's a lot of fun to get people coming in saying, oh, they have this on the menu and that on the menu. So, yeah, we pride ourselves on our food. People come in for that.
I guess your kid can have one of these drinks.
Oh, yeah. Yep. He's tried these products and... Yeah, we have a 19-year-old now, so in maybe a couple of years he'll be able to try everything, but yeah.
I was thinking he was 9, but that was 10 years ago.
Yeah, it was 10 years ago. He was 9 10 years ago, yeah.
Yes. Okay, having fun praising a dry January for those who choose, and yet, again, all things await for other opportunities. Your final comment, Sarah Beerling?
Right, so we want people to come in for Dry January and throughout the year, even if they're not drinking spirits. We really want to be a gathering place, and we have food, cocktails, non-alcoholic, beer, wine. We just like to have people, host people, and have them join us.
Joel Beerling, cousin of Rick Beerling, you both married Sarahs.
Yeah, well, that's kind of weird, isn't it?
But... That's
true. That is kind of weird, but... As long as it wasn't the same one.
No, right, well, that's as far as I know.
We are different people.
Stop. You're a wonderful family. All right, Joel Beerling, finish us off. How do we find out more information on what? Neat Point Spirits?
Right, so you can find more information about it on our website, beerdistillery.com, B-I-E-R, distillery.com. You can visit us in Comstock Park, about a mile away from the ballpark, and visit our Facebook page, social media, and everything else.
Great, well... be on your grounds soon. Thank you, Beerlings, on behalf of Beer Distillery. Happy New Year.
Thank you.
All right, there you are, 9:58 in the morning. Your inspiration for the day, according to Haruki Murakami, I dream. Sometimes I think that's the only right thing to do. Well, dream on. Hope you enjoyed the show. I'm Shelley Irwin. Have a good day.